Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, I've been looking forward to this for a fair while. The man before me is one of our nation's most significant cultural figures, especially since his work as an artist, with a conscience in particular, has moved an audience of young, middling and old for over 50 years. Half a century later, he still has millennials and centenarians among his devoted fans. A brand new album, A Terrible Beauty, is out now with Claddagh Records, 56 years after his debut record. He has such an identifiable sound. You need only make this noise, a doop a doop a doop a doop, or shout for the last few jackasses to know I'm talking about Christy Moore. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Oliver.
Are you in flying form?
I'm really happy to be here, and I am in flying form, I have to say. I'm enjoying my life. You know,
loving the work.
Yeah, the gigs are really great. They're very fulfilling at the moment. Like, I do a gig and I have a week to get ready for the next one, and I'm in a very good space, I have to say.
Gorgeous way to work.
Yeah, I love the work.
The album is beautiful, and I've been dwelling in that space now for a while.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you for the gift of all this music that you keep on giving us.
Well, it sustains me in every way, you know. It gives me something to focus on. Mm. If I didn't have my work, say the couple of years I've spent putting this album together, without it, my life would have been very different.
Right.
You know.
Not as fulfilling, maybe.
Well, no, it wouldn't have been as fulfilling. I need the distraction of the work.
Yeah. But I love that it's important to you. Now, speaking of asking you in flying form, I read, I don't know if this is still true, you had a fear of flying at one point, maybe you still do?
I didn't fly for, I think, 22 years now.
Really?
And I think my life is all the better. When I hear the stress that people endure going on planes now, you know, people come back wrecked at the experience of airports and planes and Michael O'Leary and...
corporations and whatnot. How do we know you're not a fan? And have you ever examined that fear? What's going on?
Well, about 30 years ago, I started to get kind of pangs of claustrophobia. Mm. And that has gotten worse over the years. And that will be part of it. And when it goes beyond flying, lifts is another one. And another thing is locking doors if I'm using public spaces. I find it very hard to lock the door. Actually, I find it impossible.
Go away.
Yeah, I get overcome with a fear. One night we were playing over in outside London in a theatre, and I went into this lavatory and I locked the door and I couldn't unlock it, and nobody could hear me. So it was like I was missing. And it really wrecked my head. And so I've never analysed it, or I've never sought analysis, but I just have to live with it. And
so when you gig in Britain, for instance, you're always going by ferry?
Oh yeah, or even latterly in Europe, I'd get the ferry to England and then drive across England and get another ferry.
Yeah.
And I quite liked that, to tell you the truth. I liked being on those ferries.
The pace of it would suit you.
Yeah, well, you go into a space, you know, you go into a space and you reflect and you think about where you're going and what am I going to do in Liverpool tonight now? What songs might I sing? And
I find that kind of phobia that you have fascinating, because fear is not something I would associate with Christy Moore. I would say you're one of the most fearless people we've had in the cultural world, because in entertainment where the market dictates, you know, being outspoken is a leprosy in a way, isn't it? And that's what you've done all your life. You've been outspoken on causes that matter to you.
I certainly suffer from fear, you know. Definitely, I wouldn't be far from fearless. But with regard to the material and the things I've done over the years, that's almost like a need within me. I mean, I've been given this voice to sing, and from a very early age, like before we started, we were talking about Boy George and about him going into Mountjoy and Kevin Barry. Mm. My very first song was Kevin Barry. My mother had a great affection for Kevin Barry.
Yeah.
My second brother was called Kevin Barry. He's now called Luca Bloom. But he was Kevin Barry Moore until he was in his mid-20s. And so the very first song I learned was Kevin Barry, and it affected me. And that song still affects me. So certain songs affect me. And
what was the effect it had? Is it the story of such a young man who...
The emotion of it. I suppose that would have come from my mother when she sang it. She had an emotion within her as she sang it. And when the last time I sang it was in Barrowland in Glasgow. And the room just went silent. And it was just a powerful few moments, just singing about Kevin Barry in Glasgow, and people have been emotionally affected by it.
Do you remember the first time your social conscious, I suppose, motivated you to say something that you wanted to say through music?
Well, I would have been singing for quite a long time before I encountered, say, the work of Ewan McCall and the work of Woody Guthrie. And I would have been singing songs before that, but around that time I began to realise that songs could be contemporary. We didn't have to be singing about 1798 or 1916. We could be singing about what's happening today. We could be more contemporary in our songs. And that was a wake up for me. And I suppose I would have been in my mid-20s when I got that. But I had been singing for a long time before that.
But I think it is fearless, because you would have risked... you've always risked opposition and criticism for going what they would say you're going political.
Well, I welcome that. You know, I always feel if the song or the verse is rattling somebody, it's working, you know. It's
because the entertainment industry is averse to that. They always have been. It's not a new thing.
I would find it very difficult, say, for example, during the hunger strikes. I would have found it very, very difficult to go out and sing for 2 hours and not allude whatsoever to what was happening 90 miles up the road. And that's just the way. I've no problem with people who don't say anything or don't become involved. That's their right.
Yeah.
But I just follow my own instinct.
90 miles to Dublin.
90 miles to Dublin town.
That was the song. The strain of performing, I mean, has to be associated with what you talk about, the fear of flying and so on. And I was watching an interview you did with Gay Byrne in 1999, and you said you just weren't going to tour anymore. And you were on a break, I think, at that stage, were you, between a break? Do you remember that time, or what was happening?
I took a tumble, you know, I kind of fell asunder. And I had an 18-month period where I said yes to everything. And then a year I went to Australia once and America twice and arrived back and just kind of fell asunder. And I thought I wouldn't be able to do it anymore. I'd lost I don't know what I'd lost, but I wasn't able to leave the house and I wasn't able to answer the phone. And it was a very difficult time for my family. But gradually I got through it. I met a great man called Paddy Nugent, Dr. Paddy Nugent. And Paddy kind of put me back together again.
How did he fix it?
He talked to me and listened to me and shared things with me and just spoke to me gently and also spoke to me occasionally with a little touch of frustration. And the late Dr. Paddy Nugent, he was a great man.
And now look at you, you're in Vicar Street so long, you'll have to pay property tax there in no time.
It's great. Yeah, I have to pinch myself. That's the way it's... Like after COVID, I've just gained a whole new audience.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, that's what I said at the start. Millennials, Gen Zennials.
Yeah.
Right the way through.
Youngsters coming in to hear the ballads. It's great.
But I'm not surprised with that because of the causes of injustice and the meaning of songs. If it's not out there, they will have to go back to what their fathers, grandfathers have been listening to. If you don't take offence to that, but 56 years, you will have triple generations in there.
Yeah, yeah. I get a great buzz. Sometimes I hear of three generations of a family coming together. Mm. Kids, parents and grandparents. And that's a great buzz. And a lot of people, not a lot of people, but some people make contact saying, can my 14-year-old come? Will they be allowed in? Or can my 11-year-old? I mean, sometimes I got kids singing along with the songs.
Yeah.
You know, there's a young guy up there in Mullabong, and I was singing one night, I think in Armagh, And it's this little voice coming at me from the front row. And I brought him up on the stage okay. and he sang Nancy Spain with me.
Go away.
And it went viral. And it was just a lovely thing, you know. And I'm still in touch with him, with that kid, yeah.
You seem to be in touch with a lot of people. I often wonder how you keep correspondence because people send you scraps of songs. They might, at the end of a gig, give you things written on wrappers and...
I get a lot of that, but I also get a lot of stuff coming into my website. I'm very active in my website.
Right.
I respond to everyone that writes as best I can. Like yesterday, I got a beautiful song from a lad down in Cork about Gugan Barra. And he wrote this song. His father used to paint Gugan Barra a lot. And he's written a song about his late father's painting of Gugan Barra. And it's a beautiful song. And he put it up on my website yesterday. And it's beautiful.
Right, so you keep in touch?
Very
and,
much.
And you keep up to date? Because the album touches on a lot of very modern and present issues as well. Ukraine is in there, obviously the situation in Palestine, which you come to, but even the far right, you've got a special song for them.
Yeah, Snowflakes was kind of almost like an afterthought. And that came about, there's a guy called Martin Leahy who's down there in Bandon, and every Thursday for the last couple of years, he makes his way up to Leinster House and sings his song at the gates of Leinster House, all under his own steam.
Yeah, but he's on the homelessness.
Everyone should have a home.
Yeah.
And on the back of that, he got fierce stick on social media, which caused him to write Snowflakes. And he sent that to me and allowed me to play around with it just slightly.
Yeah.
And I thought, feck it, I'm going to put it on the...
It's very funny, but also... humour is a good outlet or a good medium for anger, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the best. Mm. You know, it also causes a little bit of confusion when I do it at gigs because people are trying to figure out what's he saying here, you know? I like that.
They're looking for who's the character that's singing the song.
They're looking
is this
for
Christie's
something.
Op-ed?
Yeah, they're trying to just figure out what's he doing here, you know? And I like that.
You like that? It's called A Terrible Beauty, so you've got the Yeatsian thing in there and...
I deny that. No, everybody assumes that.
Okay.
But I went into an art gallery to look at pictures and there on the wall was this picture called A Terrible Beauty.
Right.
A stunning painting by Martin Gale. And it turns out I was in school with Martin Gale.
Really?
I knew Martin Gale from 60 years ago. And a lovely, lovely man. And I think it's a stunning picture.
This is the artwork?
This is the artwork.
The
and
album.
His picture was, the title of his picture was A Terrible Beauty. And it's in the painting. There's Terrible Beauty.
Because I was putting my head straight to Yeats. And his Terrible Beauty, of course, is the rebellion in 1916. The terrible was being obvious, the trauma. But also the beauty being what comes out.
Well, everybody assumes Yeats. Everybody who's seen the title of the album assumes it's Yeatsian.
Proven wrong.
But people were saying terrible and people were saying beautiful before Yeats was born. So, you know, he doesn't own those words.
Yeah, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. feminism is really important in this album.
Good.
I think. We listened to it and we said there are a lot of songs to do with feminism. The Black and Amber, which is on the theme of domestic violence, is in there. But that's an old song, isn't it?
No.
It isn't?
No, it's a recent song written by Brian Brannigan from the band Lazarus Soul.
Okay, yes, yes. God, it just feels like something was written a long time ago.
Well, that's the style of the song,
yeah.
You know.
There's a brilliant tune about Sky Sports telling the Irish girls in green to educate themselves in Irish history.
Perhaps you Irish need to educate yourselves, he said to Chloe Mustaki, and the world stood still for 3 seconds.
It's only 2 years ago.
October 2022.
So you purposely went out to kind of... Is feminism the purposeful theme?
No, not okay. Really, no. No, no.
I want to play, because I went back and listened to that clip, the Sky Sports original thing, because I hadn't heard it since.
Oh.
And it's even more stark. So I'm going to use that as the intro.
Great.
For a little bit of Cumann na Mná, which is a great song. I think people will get the wit in here. But we'll start with that infamous... Ireland had just qualified for the World Cup. That was the joyous moment.
Yes.
And then they had been singing Celtic Symphony in the dressing room and it went viral and so on.
Yeah.
And Chloe Mustaki was unfortunate to be on Sky Sports. Let's have a listen to the interview.
Before we talk about the win, need to ask you about the statement that's just come out from the FAI in which they've apologised for the player singing a song that references the IRA. Would you like to apologise?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we're all really sorry here in Dublin. Obviously, massive lapse in judgment on our end. You know, lots going on when the final whistle went, and we absolutely didn't mean to cause any hurt on our end. So we do really apologise for that, absolutely.
I guess it raises the question, does it highlight the need for education on issues like this? Is that something you'd be for?
I don't really think so. I think, you know, we need to learn in these moments to be better and to do better. You know, we've all been brought up knowing a lot about, you know, Irish history. So, you know, we just need to be better in moments like this. And we recognise that absolutely on our end.
Rob Wotton was the anchorman that night on Sky TV, with our star midfielder, Chloe Mustaki. "We were awfully offended," he said, "by your Celtic symphony. Might you Irish need to educate yourselves?" said the man from B Sky B. "I nearly choked on me hobnob. I kicked the poof across the floor. The pit bull nearly died of fright and scarpered out the door. I said three quick Hail Marys, a Lord's Prayer and a Glory Be. And I sang for Mr. Wotton, the man from B Sky B.
The reason I played the clip is I'd forgotten that Chloe Mustaki had given him a good old lesson actually in there and said, "We're actually quite fine on Irish history, thank you very much." But ooh, coming to mana, that is a that's a lovely twist on things.
Well, that again, that was originally covered by Mick Blake. Mick Blake wrote something in response to that. He's a songwriter up in Leitrim, school teacher. And when I heard Mick's verses, I contacted him and said, "Do you mind if I develop that a little bit?"
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I also realised that "Cumann na mná" is grammatically incorrect. That has been pointed out to me already.
I was going to ask, but it fits so well on the meter, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
"Cumann na mán," of course, was the.
Yeah.
But it's, you'll be grand.
Ah, we'll get through it.
It's lasted. Listen, I'm going to talk more on this subject of feminism. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back shortly. And you're very welcome back. We're here with Christy Moore. We're talking about A Terrible Beauty, his new album, and the theme of feminism. Who are the women in your life today, Christy?
Oh, my wife, my daughter, my daughters-in-law, my sisters. They are the principal woman in my life and the memory of my late mother.
Yeah.
And my two grannies, all powerful women.
All following you behind. And
yeah, yeah.
I don't hear much. I look through loads of interviews. You don't talk about Val, your wife, much at all, or your children. That's a purposeful privacy thing, I'd imagine.
Very much so. You know, there are problems for them, you know. Sometimes my fame can intrude upon their privacy.
Mm.
And that's been something that they've handled with great poise and dignity.
Another thing you've been carrying, perhaps, is it a regret or a sort of a thing?
Well, I mean, there's a balance, you know. The downsides are, for me personally, weigh very lightly compared to all the great things that have happened to me in my life because of the success.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, yeah. We enjoy a good life because of the success of the songs, and all started off by Ronan. You know, Ronan took a shine to "Don't Forget Your Shovel" and played it every morning on the words.
Ronan Collins.
Endlessly, and my life just changed. I've been singing for maybe 12 or 15 years. And
at that point?
And Ronan started playing "Don't Forget Your Shovel," and suddenly I started getting all these gigs, and, you know, the shovel still digs on.
People probably still shout that at you.
Absolutely, yeah.
"Don't forget your shovel if you want to go to work."
Yeah.
"Don't forget your shovel, Christy."
"Don't forget your shovel. Have you got the shovel?"
Are you plagued with the selfies?
Plagued, no, not plagued. No. Sometimes it's a bit embarrassing, you know, because you've escaped totally. Mm-hmm. You're rambling around in beautiful anonymity, and somebody comes up for a selfie, and then everybody says, "Who's your man?"
Oh, I see.
"Jesus, it's your man."
There's a queue then.
I'm sure you know yourself.
I don't get as much as Christy Moore, for sure.
It's all ahead of you.
You've been recognised for 50 plus years. You didn't always like people singing along at gigs. Are they allowed to sing along now?
I don't know where that comes from. That's nonsense. You know, that's some stupid journalist, you know.
I think I've heard fans say, now, I've never seen you do it yourself. And actually, it's been a while since I was at a gig, but I've heard people say, oh, he was ripped into someone singing right on at the top of their voice.
Well, no, you see, there's the singing and there's singing. There's different things that happen. Okay. If I start, there's certain songs I can't do, because once the audience starts clapping, I can't play it.
Oh, right.
So I just don't play them anymore. Mm-hmm. I purposely start all my gigs now with the most sing-along songs I have. I just love when people sing.
Yeah.
It's such a buzz to hear, you know, 1,000 people singing a song you've written. Jesus, it's fantastic.
So there's allegations of a allegedly grumpy Christy Moore.
Well, I have, some people have me down as just a miserable old bollocks, but
not with the crack then, not with the crack you're having. Your mother, you mentioned, she was a politician, and maybe she lived in a different time. She might have been a political force.
Well, perhaps, you know, primarily she was a Meath woman from the Yellow Furs and a wonderful singer and a great mother. And she reared us all. Daddy died when we were all very, very young, and that changed the course of her life. Daddy was involved in local politics, and she took on his political position as well. And she was the town commissioners and the county council and on a lot of different movements, social movements in the town. So I'm sure her life would have been very, very different. But all of us would have had different lives if certain things hadn't happened.
History was different. So Nancy Moore, she ran as Anne Moore in the June 1969 general election for Fine Gael, which I think people might be surprised to hear that you're a Fine Gael mammy.
Yeah, that's... Well, see, Daddy was a Fine Gael councillor and she took on his seat, but shortly afterwards went independent.
It was a broad church as well at the time, I would say. Mm. So she was the only female candidate in 1969, which I presume meant that she wouldn't have had a chance. And there's a Leinster Leader article I found, and here's what she said. She said, "Women play a big part in the fight for freedom, but under native government, our voices have been silent. It's time the nation tuned into the women's viewpoint." She said she was proud to be the only woman candidate, and her election platform was simple. Her ambition is to get political thinking from the grassroots rather from faceless experts who are changing the country into their own streamlined idea of efficiency.
That's our motto.
She was fiercely articulate. She was on the Late Late, I think, twice, was she?
Yeah, Gay had a great old shine for Mammy, you know, and her for him as well. When our kids were small, I used to tell them that Gay Byrne was Mammy's boyfriend, and they used to believe it.
So she's on the Late Late Show. It's May 1988, and she's chatting from the audience to Gay Byrne. We'll have a listen to this.
Great.
Roll it there.
Are you proud of your family, Mrs. Moore?
Oh, well, Nancy, if you please. Nobody calls me Mrs. Moore, and the people that don't like me.
Nancy the Mammy.
Nancy the Mammy.
Nancy the Mammy. In Newbridge.
In Newbridge. Yeah. And Kildare.
But you're proud of Christy, aren't you?
Oh, of course. I'm proud of all of them. I, you know, I have girls too, you know, I have three daughters.
Ailish.
Okay. And Anne and Terry. And I have another son, Dan, in Cork, who is also a good singer.
See, where did all the singing come from?
I'm a frustrated singer myself.
Oh, you are. Yeah. Oh, lovely. You had to rear them all then and get them out.
I wanted to be a singer myself, you see. And I got a chance one time when I was in Greg College, and I was offered a lead part in Lilac Time. And I was delighted. Oh, I was overjoyed. And I told my father, I said, "Now listen," he said, "child," he said, "you have a grand little voice. And amuse yourself and a few of your friends. Go back and do your shorting and typing and get a little job like a good child." And I didn't get a nervous breakdown or anything. I just cried for 2 days and got over it.
And no Lilac Time.
No Lilac.
God love you.
You know.
You enjoy that?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. I just like the way she was talking, you know. There was an edge to her, or the way she was talking there.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be talking that way at home, you know. There was just a slight adjustment in her.
But she was kind of fighting back a small bit, wasn't she, in a gentle, polite way?
Yeah, very much.
You could tell there was a fierceness in there.
Yeah, Yeah, she was. Oh, she was great.
Was that her telephone voice?
Well, depending on who she was talking to. Is her telephone talking to Gay Bourne voice?
Yeah. Now, she said sitting next to her is Eilish, your sister.
Yeah.
And she performed right there and then in the audience.
She did.
Would you like to hear a clip of that now? Because I think it's incredible. She's singing a cappella.
Yeah.
She's sitting down, surrounded like by people's live on television with the hot lights of the 1980s. And it's just, it's an incredible performance. It's unbelievable. This is Eilish Moore. I don't know if she's still Eilish.
Well, she's Eilish Bourne now.
Eilish.
And she was Eilish Moore. I never heard Mammy calling her Eilish before. That's because Gay said it.
She I was going with the late lady. She didn't want to correct him. She was always Eilish.
Sing me songs of days gone by. Make me laugh or make me cry. Break my female heart in two. Sing me songs that say I love you. Lower your eyes and put your hand up to your breast. Sing me songs about the sun setting in the west. Label it garbage, label it art. You couldn't call it soul, you have to call it art. Backs broke bending, digging holes to plant the seed. The owners take the cane, but the workers take the wheat. Putting wood in the stove and water in the cup. You work so hard that you die standing up.
You know, we always recognise that Eilish is the best singer of the six of us.
Oh my God, that is, she is great singer. Extraordinary.
And she never actually got really serious about it, you know. But she sang in a band called the Fallen Angels for a while, and they recorded a really nice cassette. And she did all the bits of recording as well, but Eilish was the best singer of us.
Yeah.
You know.
That was the work song by Kate McGarrigal.
Yeah.
Wrote that song, Canadian. She sings with her eyes closed as well.
I'm so happy you've played that, because that'll mean a lot to Eilish hearing
that. Oh, good.
I
was looking for your mammy, and then I listened to that.
Yeah.
And I've only played a small amount of it, but it's an unbelievable. I was totally taken away.
Oh, great. Well done, man.
And so, you know, fair play to her.
Thank you.
She's still singing, I presume.
A little bit now. Eilish has a lot of difficulties in her life now with illness, but her spirit is amazing. You know, she's still powerful, but she struggles a bit. But she struggles with courage and dignity.
The fierce women in your life. Now, why do you sing with your eyes closed?
I don't know. I mean, I'm actually trying this time round. Of a couple of songs this time round that I'm going to try and sing them with my eyes open.
Oh.
Years ago, I was playing in London one night, and Tom Paxton was in the audience. And afterwards, he came into the dressing room and he said, "I want you to do me a favour," he said. "Every time you sing Ride On, just for one of the verses, open your eyes and look around at the audience." And 30 years later, I still do that.
Brilliant.
Because he reckons that just by doing that, I have eye contact with everybody in the audience. And he's right.
Mm. And it comes as a nice surprise as well.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
By the way, 1988 is that late, late. What's going on in your life at that stage?
Oh, God. You have to come back to me on that one.
Are you in recovery by 88?
I'm coming up to it.
Oh, coming up to it.
Yeah.
I was listening to a lovely interview you gave to the two Norries.
Oh.
And you were talking about a moment, a memory you had with Fungi the Dolphin.
Yeah.
Around this time. Tell us about that.
Well, myself and my sons, Andy and Porrick, we went down to Dingle, and we went into the Dingle Bay early in the morning in wetsuits. About 6 o'clock in the morning, that was deemed to be the best time. And we were in the water, and Fungi actually appeared beside us with a salmon in its mouth. And I just had this, I said, this is an amazing thing to be in the water with my sons at the dawning of the day, and Fungi to come up and show us the salmon playfully. And another time then he went, either Andy or Porrick were swimming, and he actually went over them. it was just, I realised that in my own life, old life, I wouldn't have had that moment. Mm. You know, it was through recovery that I'd leaned at that magic moment.
I think you said it was, you had achieved your life beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah, a lot of people see that as a cliche, but I see it as I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. When I think back to some of the places stages I was at in my life, I really value my sobriety and clarity of thinking.
And, I mean, how long sober are you now?
34 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You wouldn't be here, sure.
Absolutely not. No.
You were ashamed of missing gigs in those times. It was a shame. It seems to be the big thing, doesn't it, for
the shame.
Addiction.
Yeah, shame.
Does that shame go away?
I would have let go of that, but it was a gradual thing. And sometimes, like when you mention it there, something comes to mind.
Really?
Situations where I can remember specific making a decision, I'm not going to go there tonight. I can't leave these wonderful people. I can't leave this company. And I'm in some fucking pub somewhere and getting somebody to ring the venue and say, Christy can't make it, he's had a something or other, you know. And, but thankfully, it's a long time ago. Thanks for bringing that one up.
Well, maybe the little tweaks and shivers, that we all have them.
Yeah.
Like for an addict, it can be deeper. But it maybe makes you happier or more grateful today that that's a foreign country, the past, isn't it?
I think the only difficulty I have with it is I've been talking about it for a long time now because it keeps coming up. And I can imagine some fella, oh, Jesus, here he goes again. He's off about the gargle again. You know?
How do you celebrate occasions now?
Oh, God. Well, if I make it to next May, I'll be hitting the 80 if the gatso doesn't catch me. And I hope it'll be quiet and I hope it'll be, you know, just gratitude and a bit of a dinner and with the immediate family.
Do you think about turning 80?
I do, yeah, nearly every day.
Really? Well, you probably won't think about it once you turn 80. But it's the run up, isn't it?
I don't know what it is about 80. It is like a speed in a car, isn't it? You know, it's 80. Yeah, he's doing 80.
It's the signs all around the place. Everywhere you drive, you see 80.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic to be still knocking about. Like none of my grandparents got next or near 80, you know, and it's the time we live in. I mean, I'm like a fucking pin cushion with jobs. I got two jobs last week. I'm getting another one today. I got the shingles and the flu last week and I'm getting the COVID today. So,
oh my God, you're going to be protected against everything.
Absolutely.
But you need it going into gigs.
Well, some people are against it all. Anything that the doctor tells me, I just get it. You know, just
you believe
it.
The science.
Oh yeah, I believe the doctor.
Good advice. I notice you, besides your wounds that you're pointing out, you have your nails very well tended.
Oh, these four. Yeah. I get these four nails done once a month because you can make more noise on the guitar with the finger picking.
Yeah, it looks great.
You know. And
Who does that for you?
I get it done in New York Nails in Dunleary.
Okay. What? Do you ask for the Christie?
Well, they know me now, you know. They know me.
But there'd be women that would be delighted with the nail. Like, they look.
Well, I don't think they haven't got a clue anything about me. The only English they speak is cash only.
I just have that vision of you now in a beauty salon, Christy Moore, and getting his nails done.
Well, there was a few of them who wouldn't deal with me at all, ran me out the door. But these.
Is that because they sang along?
You're on the ball this morning, Carl.
I do apologise. Couldn't help it, sorry. I want to dip back, actually, to the political stuff because I found another conversation I had with Eamon McCann and it's from the archives and it's a whole big, long report in a show back then. I think it was called Exhibit A and it begins talking about this man, Christy Moore, very associated with radical left-wing causes and they mention the H-blocks and they mention the miners' strike in Britain. So you're describing the fact that you're coming up to a benefit concert to raise funds for the miners in England during the strikes. It's 1984 and Eamon McCann begins this.
That's a political or semi-political concert And is how important is that aspect of what you're doing, and how do you choose the benefits that you do?
I think the main importance of the concert for me is that it's a concert to raise funds for the families of the miners who are now starting to suffer a lot. I mean, we have there's soup kitchens now in Yorkshire and Lancashire, and I think it's important to support the families of the miners in any way we can without getting involved in the political aspect of it. I mean, I didn't go through a whole political thing. I was asked to do a miners' benefit. I didn't have to think about it.
And is that the way you do get involved? Is it simply that causes appear to you which seem worth supporting rather than a political ideology which you have to fulfil?
I would say yes. Yeah. I tend to follow my heart more than any political ideology. I wouldn't even say I have political ideology.
How would you describe your politics?
I wouldn't. I mean, I've always said down through the years that I feel the main reason that people come to a gig of mine is that they'll be entertained.
39-year-old you.
Mm. Yeah, send if I may, send love to Eamon. He's still up there in Derry and still doing his best, but with difficulties.
Yeah. I like the consistency, though, that you've shown, that, like you're describing, there's no ideology you're following. You instinctively go after the human story.
Yeah, it's probably still the same today, I would imagine, you know. Yeah.
They would say that it's always a left-wing cause, though, isn't it?
I don't know. I wouldn't think so, no. I mean, is homelessness a left-wing cause, or... I wouldn't accept that. I mean, it certainly would be my leanings, mm-hmm. but my songs and my singing and my songwriting wouldn't be based on any political ideology. It would be things that affect me or things that stir my emotions. And
because the album, again, there are political issues in there. Obviously, you've got Ukraine, but it's the song is Sunflower, which is that that beautiful symbol they have
in
Ukraine. Palestine, very strong as well. And you're singing Palestine at your gigs.
Oh, every gig, yeah. Every gig I sing that song. And it's overwhelmingly received, you know. There are a few kickbacks since.
There were. Oliver Sears, who I think he's involved in Holocaust Memorial in Ireland, he wrote to you, and I think you wrote back, you exchanged correspondence. He's written about it in the Irish Times.
That's right, yeah, yeah. I met Oliver some years ago. I was recording a song of Ricky Lynch's called December 1942, and I wanted to sing it to somebody before I recorded it, and I sang it to Oliver, and he was very gracious. And Oliver really kicked back against the Palestine song, as is his right, and I respect what he said, but I still sing it.
It was quite strong. He said the song and the way the song itself made him want to leave Ireland as a Jewish man.
I just didn't accept that, you know. I think he said it on spur. As far as I know, I hope he's still here.
I think I'm pretty sure he's still here. Yeah, that's for sure. And you're still singing the song.
And we'll do so as long as that continues.
The song you said you went to chat to him about in 1940, that was about, obviously, the Holocaust.
Oh, yeah. It was a very powerful song written by Ricky Lynch from Cork. And it's on the last album, an album called Flying Into Mystery. And it's a very heavy song. I actually haven't been able to gig it because it just kills the gig.
Really?
Yeah.
Would it not be a good idea maybe to put it alongside the Palestine song to give a bit of balance, or is that in your head?
I don't think it needs balance. I don't think the situation needs balance, you know. I'm only looking at one side of this. And I think a song about the Holocaust, it doesn't balance up what's happening in Gaza this morning.
This is the argument that you're against at the moment, really, isn't it? But it's Oliver Sears' argument.
I'm not really in debate with Oliver Sears. He wrote what he wrote. I read it and I just put it aside. You know, maybe that's the easy way out. I don't know. But if I meet Oliver on the street today, I'll shake hands with him and wish him well.
Very good. And he's still here, as you say. I was moved by the sleeve notes on the album about the Palestine song. Was you were you heard the acronym, wasn't it? The acronym for the poor children in Gaza.
Yes.
That the agencies had to sort of use as shorthand to describe them.
Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. WCNSF. Yeah. That's an acronym that spells... it spells something very, very horrible and ugly and violent. And the following day, three doctors were killed in that same hospital. WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family.
It's almost like going back to where we started and the sort of the fears that you have flying, the little bit of claustrophobia. You carry a lot of kind of pain of the world. You think about it a lot. It comes across. And maybe there's someone who sings about these causes a lot and brings them around with you, that it's going to weigh on you eventually, isn't it?
Yeah, but it isn't a constant thing, you know. It's part of my life. It's part of what I do. I mean, you know yourself, we bring things into our work and then we try and have a normal life, you know.
Yeah.
I also have a lot of simple things in my life. You know, so there's balance there. In my work, I sometimes get fired up with songs, but I go home then and I watch Match of the Day, you know, or I go to a match or I go to the movies and myself and Val go for a walk or we go for a drive and cook the dinner and watch
things
the
you
dishes.
Like doing. Are you a reader as well? Do you read books?
No.
You don't?
I used to be a reader, but I haven't been reading much for the last few decades. Maybe the odd book. I've three or four books on the go at the moment, but it takes me a long time to finish a book.
For years and years. Do you read the news? Do you watch the news?
No, not very much.
Really?
No. But I still have a sense of what's happening around me.
Mm-hmm. How do you catch the news and how do you find out what's happening?
The birds tell me.
The words?
The birds.
Oh, the birds. Hopefully not the tweeting ones. When you're turning 80, do you have faith in your life? Do you have a religious faith that you believe that you're going to go to heaven?
I don't know, but I believe in the power of goodness. I believe in a power greater than myself. The sun comes up every morning. It rains. The wind blows. Religion doesn't come into my life. Any aspect of religion, I shun it.
Is there an afterlife?
Probably not in the way we think about it, you know, but I think when we're spoken about and when history, we keep kind of bringing things back up. That's the afterlife. The stories linger on and the songs linger on and our descendants linger on. That's the only afterlife I would be aware of.
Well, that's a good aversion as anyone has. Chrissy, I really enjoyed the chat.
Same as that.
The new album is A Terrible Beauty. We know it's not a Yeats thing. It's a painting, for sure. It rattles quite a few people. It'll rattle colonial and maybe ecclesiastical ghosts along the way. No harm. Not bad going from an owlfella from Kildare. Thanks for bringing us on the trip. And sure, we'll see you for the next album.
Oh, I'm starting on it already.
Good luck.